As the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is karma and human relations. They say that good human relations can change the world. This world, this earth can be a heaven if we were all to be in what they call brotherly relations with each other. But as the author says, there are many who find it very difficult to have this kind of a good human relation or even a human relationship. As some very beautiful and intelligent lady approached the author and said that, you know, I have made success of everything in life except human relations. So, for some and for many today, somehow we find that human relations are not so very important till they, in the hindsight, discover that that is really, should be something which should be given a central place. We find today, as so many articles keep coming about it, if we start with the younger generation, what happens? As soon as they become financially independent, they want to stay separate. Just because you are financially independent and you can support yourself doesn't mean you have become emotionally also independent. Very rightly, Mr. Judge has to say in letters that have helped me, he's saying about Americans, but it applies to all now, that I'm tired of these Americans who gape and gape and are so Americanly independent as if men are ever independent of each other. So, what he's implying, and which is in a way a universal truth, is the interdependence and not the independence. But more and more, I think, of the younger generation is moving in that direction. And then, of course, initial few years, they may enjoy that freedom. And very quickly, that time comes when they crave for human companionship. And so, busy all the time on Instagram and Facebook and mobile phones and WhatsApp messages and whatnot. But as rightly it is pointed out by many writers that these hours that you spend watching television, hours that you spend surfing the internet, hours that you spend talking even over the phone cannot really replace the heart-to-heart talk that you have with another human being sitting by his side face-to-face. This is really something which we are seeing is slowly, as it were, becoming a rare commodity. Most of us are happy really having a distant relationship. And where do we find that marriage institution? You find there are more living relationships than marriage. Because if you ask them, they say there is a commitment phobia. We don't want to commit ourselves for the entire life. And there is a very weird trend which came out of it, and that is called, there are people who are objectum sexual. Now what is this? The first of its kind was a lady who had married to Berlin Wall. All these people, and then there are other examples where they will say when we come home, we want to tell what all happened in the office, where we were pained, where we were neglected, all that. But if we tell another person, they might really misuse and it might fire back. They might find out our weakness. So, you know, and lots of school-going children and college-going children, I mean, students would say, no, I don't have anyone that I can call as my close friend to whom I can open up and tell everything. Now this is very sad because you are afraid. And all of these who would come home, talk to a plant, talk to their computer and tell everything that happened during the day, is it natural? It's very unnatural. And that is because everybody is at fault. Either because you want independence or because you are not understanding human needs and relationship, and that's why they all say at least these inanimate objects will not reject us. There is a fear of rejection. It's a sad thing. So keeping all that in mind and also the independence that we are seeking, it's at yet another level. and that level cannot be reached unless and until we involve ourselves first. First there is an involution and there is evolution. The same thing applies here. You first get into human relations. And it's not going to be simple. It's not going to be as you expected people to be. And yet you will get into that human relations and then come out of it. So, we won't go on because this lecture is not about that. So, Vadimji writes in one place, and he has coined a unique term. He calls it philosophical anarchism. Anarchy is doing what you like. Yes, that's very simple. That is what many are doing. I know what I want in life and nobody will interfere and I'll live my life the way I want. That's one kind of anarchy. But he calls this philosophical anarchism and he says you want independence. First you will have to involve yourself. And he gives. There are institutions which is called householder life. Then an institution which is a marriage institution. There's an institution called community. There's an institution called society. So you involve in each of these institutions. You have to be with the people of community, of the society, of your nation. And in the process, you will first learn to cooperate in family with few people. Then it becomes bigger in community with few more. Then it becomes still bigger and in society with still varied kind of people and temperaments and idiosyncrasies, you learn to adjust to them. And finally, he says, then you become what he calls as that a free citizen of lawless kingdom. Now you have come to the stage where you can formulate your own laws. Because you have learned to really deal with and live with all kinds of human beings. Now you are free. But any time that you are required to meet them, mix with them, you would be able to do that. This is an altogether different kind of independence that he is talking about. And that necessarily requires us to really mingle and come together with people. So this karma is very much at the center of human relations. Why is this running away from human relations? Why is this wrong concept of independence? Because we don't understand that it is just not possible to do that. Karma will do its own work. So if we begin right from the start of our life, that in home or at your workplace or in the society, anywhere you go, you meet particular people. You can't claim that I know everybody in Bombay or I know everyone in the nation or world. We know few people. Why only those and no one else? Is it by chance? And the answer will be no. It is under law of karma. Why am I born in a particular family to particular pair of parents? Is it by chance? Again, the answer is no. In fact, we say that it all happens under karma and at one place, Mr. Judge says that we've lived so many lifetimes, so many lives. And in each life, we have had relationships. We have created affinities. And let's always remember when we say affinities, the affinities can be created by a very strong loving emotion or also affinities created by a strong hatred. So keeping that in mind, he says we've all created many affinities. And so for the soul, when it comes out of Devahan and it is time to take birth, how is this new birth decided? And we are told that that soul, that ego, amongst the strongest affinities are found parents. Out of all the affinities we have created, some are okay, some are very feeble, but some are very strong. Out of those strongest, depending upon the kind of availability of those egos on the earth also at that time, among the strongest affinity are found the parents. So this is something worth remembering. These are the beings with whom we have created a very strong affinity of either hatred or of love. other considerations. Thus, ego or soul is irresistibly drawn to a family where, along with the family members, whoever are going to be of that family, that ego has created some karma, which either requires a reward or a punishment. Say, for example, if all those family members as a whole, somewhere, as a group, have cheated someone of large sum of money. Now they all have to suffer for it. So they will come in one family, and maybe similarly they will be also cheated by someone or by that same person, or in some other way they will have to undergo the same experience which that person had to undergo. It's a kind of a collective karma and a collective punishment. So you are drawn to that karma. Another reason why you could be drawn to the family is that that is the family line which is going to give you all those skandhas, tendencies, a certain kind of mental temperament, emotional nature, physical body, and also spiritual nature. Only that family line it is possible to get. Sometimes there is something called people being born in a family where everyone has musical brain, so to speak, and then they are the great musicians who come in that family line. So this is another consideration. The third consideration is that you are drawn to that family because that family and surroundings are going to give you a chance for learning many important lessons in life. Maybe you have to learn courage, maybe you have to learn humility, maybe you have to learn something else. So all of these becomes possible in that very surroundings, and that's why you are drawn to that. And of course, therefore, you can see we are born in that particular family because we had a hand in making the situation what it is, our contribution at some time, and so you come together. Or it is that it's going to meet with your requirements to get a particular kind of personality. And we are reminded that, at least in the earlier times, when there used to be a concept of very pure family line. So the Brahmins, they would see to it that they would keep that family line pure so that only very high and noble egos will be attracted to them. And those who are evil, corrupt, would be repelled back. They will not be born in that family. And those noble egos will take birth, get knowledge, and set an example of an ideal spiritual life for the society. This was the whole idea. Unfortunately, now all the Vana Shankar is taking place, and very rare you find here and there examples of that kind of a pure family line, even among the Brahmins. Now, therefore, we are born in a particular family and particular parents as a result of karma, and we find that the force of karma may be very limited. So very strange things happen. The child is born, and very soon, both parents die. Child is put in an orphanage. One set of karma is over, another karma begins. A very different environment and a very different life. It may happen that very poor parents, and they don't mind if the child is adopted by any rich parents, so the child goes to a very rich environment. But this is real battlefield of life, the family. So here you find that there is the child and the parents. If you just take that, we find both situations. One, the child is unruly, parents are very good. Now, it is the opportunity for the child to turn the corner, learn good discipline, getting trained under the good parents. It's a punishment for parents, for some reason, to get this unruly child, and therefore an opportunity to cultivate the virtue of patience, the virtue of forgiveness, the virtue of loving someone which is very difficult to love. All that can happen. Both the sides, there are therefore lessons to be learned. It can happen the other way around. Parents are not only poor but drunkards. And then there is a child who's very upright, honest. It's such a mismatch, you can't imagine a child like that taking birth in this family. Again, it is now for the child to continue to be in that family rather than running away. If he can't really bring the parents around, just continue to support them in some way and continue to lead that life of uprightness and forge his, in a way, his own future and exhaust his karma. You see? So, this is one relationship which we find. And here, whether it is relationship between parent and child, whether it is relationship between two friends, whether it is relationship between only two colleagues in an office, the idea is of acceptance. The first thing is acceptance of people who come in our life. And it can be very difficult at times. So, we do find that the moment we show dislike and are not willing to accept a person of a particular temperament, what happens? In Gujarati we say, "Van mangyu dorthu ave." You find that what you are trying to reject, more and more people of that kind will come in your life. As one author of a particular magazine used to say that right from her childhood, she used to have to deal with very temperamental people, beginning with her father, who was very temperamental. Then she thought, okay, then she started going to school, teacher would be like that, college, professor like that, got married, husband like that, and she said, "Well, there is no hope for me." Of course, then she started taking up spiritual practices and of course went quite ahead. Now she says, "I can deal with temperamental people. And I'm glad I didn't run away from home or from any situation, but tried to understand." You see? And in fact, what we are saying, real examples are there. Somewhere when people are writing about the, you know, past life remembrance and all that, they give this very classic example that someone in Ceylon, a Buddhist person, he said he hated the British. He hated the British. And then he finds that he gets a child. And as a child grows up, he is exhibiting all British mannerism. He wants fork and spoon. He wants to go hunting animals and birds and things like that. But this person can't take it. But he recognizes and realizes that I hate it. And this is it. And how does he know? Because the boy remembers. And it's not something unusual. We are told that up to a certain age, when there is a death, which is sort of unnatural, like accident, you know, when a person dies, and he died in a Second World War. And he says, "My plane crashed somewhere near Ceylon only." He remembered that. And he was a British pilot. So there he was, remembering it, telling him, and he knows that here I am, hating the British and having a child who was British and is showing now the British mannerism. So there is no way we can just hate or distance ourselves from some people. They will be there in your life because we have to learn to accept and adjust. It goes a step further. Can you imagine? Have you ever thought about the Siamese twins? Conjointed twins, as they say. There are two bodies joined together and sometimes you just can't operate them because both may die. So one example, and you can really think how difficult it must be. These are two girls, maybe Miss A and Miss B, who are there, joined, somewhere in Britain only. So, yes, one is having long legs, other is having short. One likes this, the other likes the other thing. In every way they are different. But they are joined. The bodies are joined. And they are same. Right from beginning, we have been adjusting and cooperating with each other, whether we like it or not. See the extreme to which the nature can go in order to show that we had better accept people and learn to adjust and cooperate. And if we don't do, we have Mr. Judge telling us many times, we have taken up that particular article from Vernal Blooms where he says, if you have against you a person who is inimical to you, no matter how good you are, the person repays you only by animosity and hatred and so on. If you continue to show that, what will happen? He says that, well, you have now created a proper enemy and we'll be there with you at least for next 3 lifetimes. But notwithstanding what he does, if you try from your side to be good to him, then 1/3 of the enmity in that life from your side will be, in a way, lessened. And in 3 lifetimes, you will be free. This is something very important. We may not love that person, but we must learn to tolerate and handle that person with a calm, cool mind. It's very difficult to love. At our level, we are not asked to do that. But to have goodwill towards all, and that is what, if we start showing in the relationship without getting angry, irritated, but continue to mentally have goodwill for that person, then in 3 lifetimes, you will be free. And the excellent example is Buddha and Devadatta. Devadatta was his cousin, and he always wanted to kind of harm Buddha, who would really throw big boulders from the hills and want that he should be crushed. Nothing happens to Buddha. But Buddha, from his side, like for everyone else, he had the same metta bhavana, maitri bhavana, even for this particular cousin. So, when he dies, of course, Buddha is completely free. Karmically, your connection with that person is broken. You are not compelled to bond in the company of that person if from your side you are able to overcome that enmity. We also talk about, and as Mr. Judge has gone at length to explain, and it's a very important thing to remember in human relations, that our affinities anon save us and anon damn us. Affinities. Yes, there are affinities in life. We are drawn by hatred or by love, but we are drawn. And those very affinities can bring and really work miracles in your life, or it can drag you down. And we can think of maybe 2 friends as they grow up together, they are very close, and suddenly one of them goes off track, starts drinking, gambling. The other friend is also taken together wherever he goes. Slowly he's, as it were, made to participate in what he's doing. And soon you will have that very honest and upright boy also taking to drinking and gambling. There are many examples of. So we say you have to be very careful of whose company you keep, etc. But this is the past affinity, and it can damn you. Mr. Judge gives another example. He says, as if he is having a friend, and he says, suppose I have a friend and we have an inner bond. Then it may happen that we go on in that life and then we separate. And of course, theosophy promises that those who love each other and those who are like unto each other are definitely brought together by karma. Whenever that karma permits, we will come together. Maybe in the same family or as 2 friends or maybe as husband and wife. So he says that maybe we were there and we had an inner bond. We separated. After many lifetimes, karma brings us together. And I find that that friend has moved ahead spiritually. And I am where I am, very worldly, materialistic. And then that friend can use that inner bond, which is more than a simple human relation, to touch me inwardly and bring me on the right path. So, he says, by making use of unspent affinities, karma can bring your salvation. And we have many examples by way of stories. We are all very well aware of the story of a Buddhist monk and Amrapali. A movie also is made on that. That Amrapali was a courtesan. She was a dancing woman and very beautiful. And she was very sure when she sees this particular monk in the monastery that, oh, he's so beautiful, he's so handsome. And she makes a plan, asks Buddha, send him to live in my house for 1 month. Buddha knows the caliber of the monk also, and says, yes, he will come. The other monks are wondering, how come? In her house, he remains there for a month. And very quietly, nothing happens. No falling prey to her charm. Month is over and he says, as per the condition, good woman, can I go back to the monastery? And here she has to allow. But something wonderful happens. She follows him. Meets Buddha and says, well, I could not seduce your monk, but his spirituality has seduced me. I want to be a bhikshuni. What a wonderful thing such an affinity can bring about. So, here is someone who is on the downward path, has just come as a rebound action, meeting the right person, observing the person, and come on the right path. And quite contrary is another thing, which is the novel Zanoni, in which you find an adept of certain degree, Zanoni himself. And here we are told something very important, that the greatest test for someone who is walking the spiritual path and is ahead is the test on his idea of love. The love, which is emotional love of a human being, must be there. But it can't be there as you go and rise spiritually. There must be a transmutation and transformation in that love. That love has to become impersonal. Otherwise, we can multiply examples even from the mythology that how that love can be a test and a fall and also bringing a great tragedy on those characters. But we'll stick to this. And here you find he's an adept of some degree, Zanoni, but his love is still not impersonal. There is still that tinge of what we call as human emotion. It's not as if he's attracted to that woman, but if something in him says, when he meets a person called Viola, that she's a very nice, very good woman. And he has the dream that maybe I can bring her to the level where I am. Imagine, he's himself an adept and he thinks she's so good that I can raise her spiritually and bring her to my level. So he's always with her, trying to train her. It doesn't happen. She's a good woman and that is all. She's not a spiritual woman. So that is where, and then in fact, it is that woman through her goodness somehow is able to draw this adept in such a way that the adept who was always saying that he's for humanity, he's here to really help people and reduce their sorrow, taking the path of renunciation when he can, he is completely taken away from humanity and whole attention is centered in this one person. It seems they go to another island, they get married and have a life, very pleasant life and so on and so forth. So this is what, as Vadyaji says, that as when feeling decreases, intelligent feeling increases. And he calls compassion as intelligent feeling. Where necessarily there must be union of head and heart. It cannot be just emotion. It is intelligence combined with emotion which gives rise to compassion, which is not human love at all. Which this adept has yet to grow and cultivate in him. So from very highest to the lowest level, we are able to see the affinities and how careful we need to be about these affinities, which can really raise us, which can damn us, but we keep really making these affinities. Another aspect of this karma and human relations is that which we find everywhere, whether it is a family member, whether we are in the office, whether we are chance acquaintances. Rather than seeing good in people, very quickly we see what is wrong with them. As that example which we have given several times, about a teacher coming with a huge sheet of paper, a white sheet of paper, which has a very small black dot there. And she says, what do you see? And the whole class says, a white sheet of paper. And she says, can't any of you see that tiny black dot? This is conveying that everybody has got maybe a larger amount of something which is not likable, but everyone has something which is likable, which is worth emulating, which is something good. And so we need to see that rather than the other. If we keep seeing that negative aspect, we can never build human good human relation. That is one thing. Secondly, there is a deeper kind of implication. Where Mr. Judge goes into the debt, and this the student once narrated, I think, in a crowd of few people, and one woman was terrified to hear that. And that is what Mr. Judge is saying, that when we find fault with someone, technically and metaphysically, exactly what happens. Every time that you have a thought, it combines itself with a point of energy which you call as elemental. It becomes an entity. Now, I may not even formulate, but keep thinking when I meet that person, oh, she's very arrogant. I think she's very gossipy. I think she's this or she's that. Whenever I have a chance to meet and talk about it, I will not miss the opportunity of saying that she's very arrogant or she's very stingy or she thinks too much of herself, this, that and the other. How many times I've done that? Many times. Not for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year, 2 years. Every time I am, in a way, speaking, thinking, concentrating on that fault, in a way, though I say I don't like and take a subtle satisfaction that I don't have that vice in me. In the process, both the elementals are now given the impression, they are there in my aura. Now, they work on the law of similarity. So, that person, because he has a fault, he also or she also has lots of elementals which have the impression of this fault. It can be stinginess or it can be arrogance. But because I am also giving a thought, what happens? I begin to attract. I create what Mr. Judge calls as a focus within me, which will attract those elementals having the fault impressed upon them. And very soon you will find you have the same fault for which you were condemning the person. This is terrifying. And this, in fact, should open our eyes not to really, as far as possible, not even mention that fault. Keep in your mind, and the best that is suggested generally by the great teachers is, think about that person whose boots have become heavy with mud. Give that person a helping hand to bring him out of that mud, that may be whatever may be the negativity surrounding that person. Secondly, what are we told? Don't be too self-righteous. This is the only life you know. What do you know about your past lives? What do you know about your future ones? So you have lightened the path saying that, that where it says that, forget the statement now, but that is a very appropriate statement in Lighten the Path, which is pointing out that the sin and shame of the world are your sin and shame. The sin and shame of the world are your sin and shame. So forget about this one, two individuals. Everything that we feel like, you know, condemning, which in our conversation comes, because we keep seeing that in the television and also keep reading about them, that we just condemn. How could anyone be like this? How come anyone do like this? But rather we should say, nothing that is human is alien to me. We should really be able to accept everything. All that which happens, sin and shameful things, which are just too many these days, that sin and shame of the world are my sin and shame because, as Mr. Judge is saying, that you are not taking birth for the first. One, you don't know about your past, and so I think that same book goes on to say that the foul garment you shrink from may have been your yesterday or it may be yours tomorrow. The foul garment. Someone is wearing very dirty clothes and we shrink. It may have been your yesterday or it may be yours tomorrow. That very wise, that very condemnable thing you might have done and might have just come out of it. Maybe that skandha you have not brought now, The next life you will bring the same skanda and you might be a rapist, who knows, you might be a murderer. It is possible. We don't know what is there in the store for us. And therefore, yes, as another place he says, abstain because it is right to abstain, not because thyself is kept clean. I am Mr. Clean or I am Miss Clean, I have nothing to do with it. No, we have everything to do with it. We have to understand, don't hate wise, don't love wise, understand it. This is very difficult, understanding wise. And then finding out some ways and means of bringing those people on the right path is what is our duty as citizens and duty of those who are at the helm of affairs. Just Friday we were seeing political reforms. So it will not do to condemn, it will not do to really give them capital punishment, but we need to find. And when can we find? When we consider them as part of ourselves. All the units of humanity are part of me. And if they are part of me, then I better find how to reform them. So this also is something which we have to remember, and it also shows, therefore, that the indissoluble unity of the race demands that you recognize that every man's trouble is partly because of yourself, because you have been a unit of this race for a long time and you have done something to create this situation. And therefore, we are responsible for whatever we find in the society today, whether it is the society, community, or even a nation. So, when we find someone who is poor and comes to you for money, when we find someone who comes to you for a kind of sympathy, or you have to help him out in the legal manner, whatever the help required, we can't distance ourselves and say, oh, it's his karma. In fact, Mr. Judd says that no one is born with that written on his forehead, that such and such part is his individual karma and such part is collective karma. So let's remember, there is individual karma and there is collective karma. And that collective karma is the family karma, the community karma, the social karma, and the national karma. And immediately it shows that you are in a family where the father is earning his living by unfair means, by taking bribe. And I'm very, very upright and self-righteous boy. And I'll say, I don't want to remain in a family where the father is earning his money like that. Will that do? Is that right? It is not right. We may not be able to explain, but karmically the explanation comes like this. You would not be in that family unless and until you have some relation, unless and until you had a hand in making his character what it is. One place Mr. Judge gives this very short story form, but a far-reaching lesson. He says there was a king and there was a prince, and he has done something, and for that crime, the punishment is that a big boulder has to be taken. That is what is decided by the ministers of the king, and it must be thrown on his head. Then someone says, a wise person, if you do that, he will die. He won't learn the lesson. So do one thing. You break that big boulder into small, small pieces of stone. Throw some pieces on his head, little at a time. Every time that he gets that, he will be hurt. He will think, what did I do to really deserve this pain? He'll be set to think. That is not all. He says, take some pieces and keep. And they must be thrown on the heads of his children and grandchildren. Because they would not be born in that family line unless they had a hand in making his character what it is. And sometimes this, Mr. Judge is saying, because there is that statement, the sins of fathers visit the children or visit the son, whatever. Sins of father visit children? Why? This is the thing. It's a very small collective karma group, and that is family. And many times you think, what could I have done to deserve this kind of society? What could I have done to deserve this community? and this nation. This is also worth understanding. Time will not permit, but aren't we doing that? Just like you think and prepare yourself to leave that family where you find this is not right, that is not right, so also people prepare themselves to leave a nation where they have grown up, they have got their education, they have got everything. And then when they are completely prepared, they go to another country. It's not as if that country is something where they are, they may call it as their karma bhumi, where like Mother Teresa coming from far away to India and doing a wonderful work of helping so many human beings. They won't do that. But there is something else which is very attractive. Maybe money, maybe whatever. So this equation also has to be kept in mind. Individual and collective karma. And we, therefore, it's not so easy for us to desert that community or country or whatever it is. Remain in it and try to see what we can. And it's a beautiful concept of human relation and karma where it comes through in the collective karma. What do we know about collective karma? If we just sit down and think of the so many things that we are using, including this glass, this paper, the books, and today, the excellent transport system, the mobile phones, the internets, and what have you. Life has been very comfortable. And you ask yourself, what did I do? Did I invent any of these? Or did I even manufacture any of this? The answer is no. I as being part of the whole, without really contributing straight away, directly, I'm enjoying the benefit. Then, why do I crib and not do anything about it when there is pollution? And take care as how I can reduce that pollution. Oh, in India there is a lot of red tapism. Nothing gets done unless you grease their palms, do this. Why do we talk about it? Why don't we think and do something about it? As we said, according to theosophy, you would not be here in India as a person coming across such things in the system unless and until we have some contribution in making India what it is. Not now, but maybe in our previous life. So what are we going to do? Are we not going to put it right? Or at least make an attempt. As she says, what should you do for bringing reform? Arouse public opinion. Tomorrow it will not happen. In our lifetime also it will not happen. But at least it is no point just condemning and keeping quiet. So everything good and bad, it comes to us as a result of our karmic connection. To run away from any situation is not the solution we have seen. You are brought in the company of that person, and similarly you will be brought in that very environment till we learn to accept that environment, people, circumstances, our learning must happen there rather than running away from there. And we can also ask, what am I making by way of contribution to my community, my family, and to my nation? And that, of course, is simple. If you are working, do it honestly, give your 100%, 1000%, as people say, to the work. Do it in such a manner that you have done something for humanity and it is a small contribution. You might be only making dolls. Prepare them with such love and such care and think some child will play with this doll and get pleasure. Think like that. After all, it's not just doing it meticulously, but also pouring your feelings into the work so that that very work gets transformed and becomes something else. It becomes what Vadaji would call sacrifice and a sacrament. Little duties of life, they must become sacramental. And you should be able to connect it to something at a higher level. Today I am just cleaning up the ground. Time comes when I will have that knowledge where I will be able to clean the minds and hearts of people, is what he is recommending. So all that can be done, but time is going to run out. we'll carry with us a very practical point of view given by Epictetus. He's saying, human betterment is a gradual two steps forward, one step back effort. Forgive others for their misdeeds over and over again. This gesture fosters inner ease. Forgive yourself over and over again. Then try to do better next time. Regularly ask yourself, and this is very important, this at least we can do, how are my thoughts, words and deeds affecting my friends, my spouse, my neighbor, my child, my employer, my subordinates, my fellow citizens? Am I doing my part to contribute to the spiritual progress of all with whom I come in contact? Make it your business to draw the best in others by being an exemplar yourself. If you put into practice, good human relationships will be established. We have still 5 to 7 minutes for asking questions, if any. No questions. Yeah. Yeah, this is a practical question, and we would all definitely are bound to come across this experience when we try to live the life as has been recommended. That if you try to be good to people, you, in a way, don't pay attention to the way they are trying to cross your path or even harass you sometimes and all that. Try to be good. And then they either think that she is stupid or she's gola, or she doesn't understand, or they don't care at all what you are, and they continue to do what they are doing because that is their just second nature. They will do what they are doing. So then you feel very bitter and hurt. So what should you do at that time? The idea is to continue. There's no other way. You have to continue. I think someone has said that, and it's a very, very common now. It's a beautiful thing coming from a judge who is retiring, and he has to give a speech. And he says, I'll tell in his own words, Zindagi jeena aasan nahi hai, usko aasan banana padta hai. How? Aasan kaise banana padta hai? To thoda sabr karke, thoda, what is it? Yeah, he's using thoda sabr karke, थोड़ा समथिंग करके और बहुत कुछ नजरअंदाज करके. सब्र करके मीनिंग यू हैव टू बी पेशेंट एंड यू हैव टू मेनली इग्नोर एज इफ इट हैज नॉट हैपन टू यू, एज इफ दे हैव नॉट डन इट टू यू. सब्र करके, बर्दाश्त करके, थोड़ा बर्दाश्त करके, थोड़ा सब्र करके और बहुत कुछ नजरअंदाज करके. सो यू हैव टू लर्न टू बेयर. दैट्स ऑल्सो वेरी इंपॉर्टेंट. यू हैव टू बी पेशेंट विद देम एंड यू हैव टू बेयर विद देम वॉट एवर दे आर डूइंग एंड अ लॉट ऑफ इट यू हैव टू इग्नोर. एज आई थिंक एचपीवी और जज हु सेज, फॉरगिव फॉरगिव एंड लार्जली फॉरगेट. नाउ दिस विल कम वेरी वेरी स्लोली. सो वी आर नॉट आस्क्ड टू मेक the first great stride in small, small things. As he himself says, sit on your small irritations and the bigger one will not have occasion to arise. Because there are little, little things about people where they don't really act as we expected. What we are expecting is that if I am nice, they will be nice. Now that is your mistake. You are not supposed to be nice because so that they will be nice. They have to automatically become nice one day. That they may not be come in this entire life. But you have to only remember that I have to be nice come what may. And the day I am not able to bear, maybe I will drop it for a little while. This is one of the things Mr. Judge also says. Drop that discipline you have taken up for a little while, it becomes unbearable. Again you start. And sometimes bitterness comes, don't feel what you may call as, guilty about it. We are human and therefore we are weak, as he says. We are weak. We are not really prepared ourselves to deal with every kind of human temperament. And let's remember, we get only those human beings which are there for us to teach a lesson. Already when we know and we can really handle them, we are able to handle them. Other people will say, hey, how do you manage her? No, I manage. What is there? I don't mind if people tell lies. Let it be with her. I don't care. Some people, it matters a lot. She's telling lies all the time. And they would be so angry. I hate people who tell lies. I hate people who pretend. But another person will handle that very well. So it's me who has to learn. If I have to learn, then such people will come and I will have to bear with them and see what best I can do in the situation. And we don't have to be too good so that people start taking advantage of you. Nobody is saying that. We are not told that you have to do and behave and live in such a way that people will take advantage. As just now we are going to have very soon that chapter which is on self-sacrifice. You are making sacrifice of your energy. You are making sacrifice of your mental energy. Sacrifice of your even psychic energy. You have to be very careful. Now, very simple example. On the one hand, Mr. Judge is saying, it's not as if the person is good or bad. Mr. Judge says there is somebody who wants to come and tell the sob story or all that happens in his or her life. Even if you are reading, please put it aside. Especially, it is your leisure time. You are not doing theosophical reading or something important. It's only some novel. Keep aside, listen to the person. Good. That means that person's problem should take precedence over your own entertainment or, in a way, recreation. But, on the other hand, what does HPP say? She says that there is a person who comes again and again and gives a story and drains you of your psychic energy. There are people like that. They'll want to tell everything that happened. And if you start telling them what you should do, they're not ready to listen. They delight in only narrating the problem. It can be very irritating. Here I am showing you the solution. No, they like to narrate the problem. Then HPP is saying that every person has got limited psychic energy. If you are earning $1 a day and spend $2 a day, at the end of month you have $30 as your deficit. So please don't do that. If you have duty towards other, you have duty towards your own self. Useless sacrifice is a crime of folly. So, in the process of tolerating people, trying to adjust to people, cooperating with people, what is required is discrimination. And that discrimination is not written somewhere as a ready-made rule. It is something which your own higher nature will guide you about as you continue to walk that path. You continue to walk the path. And whenever that problem comes, you'll say, now what do I do with this person? An answer will come from within. But you don't give up just because you come across people who will not really be changed because you are showing a good behavior. We'll just close this with that wonderful story coming from Ramakrishna Paramhamsa. It's really lovely where there is a serpent who is biting, poisonous snake. And he is biting. And children generally are throwing stones and doing all that. Then Ramakrishna Paramhamsa, as it were, like Saint Francis of Assisi, has got a conversation and says that, why do you do that, brother? You should not. You are biting people, people die, or something happens. So then he says, okay, now onwards, because you have told me, I won't bite anymore. So the serpent will be passing. Now children see that nothing happens. So they start throwing stones. More and more children come in groups and they stone the particular serpent. And he has to somehow hide and just save himself. Then again he goes, now what do I do? Then he says, futkaro par kato mat. You can make that noise. So they will all think that now you are going to bite. But don't bite them. So we have to find out our ways and means, which will kind of warn a person that this will not do. But inside, don't have bitterness. I've seen some of our own senior students who would speak with a little loud voice, and then after that they will smile and say, I didn't mean it at all. That means inside they don't have any enmity, but that person has to be shown that this discipline has to be followed. But they will say, man mein kuch nahi hai. This is the thing. So we'll find out ways and means of doing. We have to do it. This is the way, and it's going to be most difficult in the world in which we live to be good and repay goodness for the evil which is done to us. Thank you.